And welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus 107 in the afternoon on this Thursday. Plenty of sunshine. Temperatures already in the 80s outside. Unbelievably nice. It is a little bit on the windy side, but boy, you know, we could use some rain, that's for sure. Not like they're getting down in the southeast, though. Boy, oh boy. This one is going to be a widespread event, not just affecting the coastal regions of Florida. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our wonderful, talented Ag Director Bridget Riedel and Meteorologist Wonder Boy Justin Storm. How you guys doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. Bridget?
All is going well over here today. Like you said, good weather and a little bit of a breeze. So far, so good as far as combining is going. I've gotten just a few messages, you know, who's in the field, where at. Unfortunately, we've already had one combine fire over in Minnesota. That's a rough start to your season when you already burn one up. But That's why you carry insurance and you go have a good talk with your local equipment dealer to see what you can do.
Okay, so what do you do in that situation? You just swap it out for another one, take on another loan, or I suppose, like you said, the insurance company just gives you money to replace it?
Talk to your insurance company. You got to decide, you know, depth of challenges here, right? How bad is the damage? Is it something you can keep going? But also, a little bit like getting a loaner car. If it's that bad, and you burned her up to the frame or whatever the case might be, you may indeed wind up having to go get a loaner like you would just a rental vehicle and got to get going. We got a combine. Can't hold back yet.
I see. Well, we got some fun things coming up on the program today. Levi Otis is going to be joining us in the 120 hour. He's with Ellingson Drainage. So we'll be talking about that a little bit, how it works and what exactly is drain tile in a farm field. That's kind of similar to drain tile around your house. So we'll kind of learn more about that in the 120 segment. And if you want to ask any questions, you can send them ahead of time via email. That's weatherorag@flagfamily.com. You can message Bridget on her personal device, or you can call into the studio line, which you can do at any point during the show to join our conversation, ask some questions, or change the topic. 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe line. You can also watch us there on live streams on Facebook and YouTube Live as well. And we got a few ag topics we'll go over throughout the course of our hour as well. We got a little bit about yesterday, or one from yesterday, about AI, but also horse at risk for skin cancer and rainy conditions equal hoof rot. So we'll touch on that. And I think we need to reach back out to Nate the Hoof Guy, see if he wants to come back on and explain some of these things that we've been touching on when it comes to hoof health.
I would like to have Nate join us again. That was a fun conversation, and I think things have really probably changed for him as far as what he does. I know at the time he was working strategically with dairy farms, and I would be curious if that's changed because there's been quite a bit of upheaval in the dairy industry in the state of Wisconsin, but I think he just does a great job, and I would be super interested to see what he has to say. It's fun to follow folks like that and then just understand how this works on an animal, right? When you're going to have the hooves trimmed to alleviate abscesses, you want to have them walking on solid, good footing because nobody wants a limp, much less a four-legged creature.
No, you don't. Dean, how's your limp? Your leg was aching the other day, wasn't it?
Oh, that's my back. The back goes into the limp.
It transfers into it, though.
Does, yeah. Little better after some good chiropractic help.
There you go. You must be excited. You're heading on vacation. You're going to go play some golf and screw the back up again in Arizona?
You know what? I just got done playing a week of golf, and the back held up. So going to do a little – well, we're only doing one day of golf. There's going to be a lot of water that we're going to be around because it's supposed to be about 110 to 114 there every day. You'd think we're warm here. They are setting.
Yeah, but it's a dry heat.
It is a dry heat. Yeah, but you still have to be by water. Yeah.
So. It don't count. It's a dry heat. It doesn't matter.
Not at all?
Hot is not hot in Arizona. No, okay. Apparently not from what I'm told.
I'll remember that when I'm out.
Yeah, you let me know how that goes.
You want me to bring you guys back anything?
oh, what can we get? I want another cactus.
You need another cactus that you can't kill this time.
Yeah, maybe just get me a dead one. Save yourself a buck. Okay. But the dead one is still in the office. It's still kicking strong.
It's kicking
not that strong.
It's kicking something. Maybe some, I'm not sure what
it is. Maybe some jumping beans. Those would be cool.
Okay. We might have to go across the border
for that. Bridget, what do you want from Arizona?
Believe me, there's nothing in Arizona I really need. I said need.
Coffee cup?
I mean, they do raise quite a bit of our crop production down there when you think about things like leafy vegetables, lettuces, and so forth. So that I wouldn't mind having. But is it a need? Not necessarily. I have a garden.
Okay, what do you want?
We could bring her back. Tell you what, I'll bring back two similar cacti, okay? One for Bridget and one for you. And we'll have a growing contest to see who does best after 6 months, or actually who can kill it fastest.
Usually you don't water something to kill it. In terms of a cactus, you just got to water it and it'll die.
If you water it too much. Yep.
Yeah, just give it a lot of water. Anyway, you're speaking of it being hot down there, hot up here, hot everywhere. Man. What is that forecast for the day, Dean?
Well, I'll tell you what. We do have some, I don't want to say cooler weather, but at least a return to seasonal weather out there.
It's cooler.
Yeah, not for today, though. Today, we're currently already in the low to mid-80s, and we'll warm up today into the mid to upper 80s across much of the area, with south winds about 20 to 35. Tonight, down into the mid-50s, and as we head into your Friday, winds shift to the north. That'll drag down slightly cooler air, but not much. Upper 70s to near 80, then low 80s over the weekend on Saturday, and Sunday mid-80s, but then a cool front hits Sunday, and that should drag temperatures back down to seasonal levels to start off next week back into the 60s. So that will be a little more typical for end of September and turning the page into October next week already. So looking at some of our long-range models, they are indicating a more seasonal type weather pattern kind of setting up as we head into October. So none of these stretches of 80-degree weather. In fact, I don't know if you caught this, Justin, and same with you, Bridget. Record. It's been a record dry month, obviously, but it's also been a record warm month. We're the record number of 80 degree days or warmer in September is 19. We're at 15 right now. I think we're going to fall just short as we head into the week. Yeah, but a pretty impressive record to flirt with. Unfortunately, like I said, a record dry month with only 0.08 of an inch of precip. Yeah, just incredible.
We did tie the record for the most consecutive days at 80, though, in September.
Was that
we
six?
Tied it at 13.
13 consecutive?
13 consecutive days. This is not today. This was set a few days ago before we dropped below 80. This was set the end of last week, I thought.
Was it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you positive?
I am positive.
Okay. I'm going to double check just to make sure.
I'll pull up some confirming stats. We'll talk about it our last segment. But before we do that, let's talk about the big spinny boy down to the southeast. What is going on with that spinny-looking cloud right there?
Yeah, Hurricane Helene. This is a Cat 2 hurricane right now, expected to strengthen into a Cat 3. Now, a lot of times these storms will race through the state of Florida and go back out to sea in the Atlantic, but this one is coming inland, and as it does, it's going to hit the Big Bend area of Florida with torrential rain, storm surge. They're calling it, they're expecting catastrophic storm surge there. As it goes inland, it's going to hit the mountainous regions of the southeast and dump anywhere between 10 and 20 plus inches of rain, which is going to cause enormous flooding down in the southeast. So if you know any friends or relatives down there, I'm sure they're well aware of it, but a lot of people evacuating, not just along the coast, but even inland as well. So not good news for them. This is going to spread all the way up into portions of southern Indiana, Tennessee, where they're expecting flooding rainfall as well. So Boy, oh boy. You know, we could use a little bit of that rain, but boy, not that much. It's and this same area just got hit with Hurricane Beryl, and then there was another one after that, I believe. Wasn't there, Justin? And
indeed.
Yeah, these same areas. Oh, man. I know Jay is going to have his son is down in Tampa. Jay Thomas will have his son on the show coming up here after Weather and Ag, and he'll kind of go over what they're doing in Tampa. Tampa's not even going to get a direct hit out of this, but they're still in they're going to get quite a bit of rain and storm surge there as well. So up
yeah, they're gonna
you know, our guest yesterday, Kevin Folta, he and I were messaging later in the day yesterday, and he said he's expecting some pretty strong winds, very nervous about fruit trees, especially shallow rooted trees like peaches. So think about how that's going to affect our fresh fruit crop over the next few months. They'll likely get pushed over. He talked yesterday about the plastic high tunnels that they have that could get damaged that they want to try to secure as much as possible. And they have a lot of meat that they produce and then they store. So they have many, many dollars of homemade sausage and pork at risk. And they figure they've got gas to run their generators 3 to 4 days, but that's about it. So keep that in mind as other effects of the hurricane, right? What does that do to our overall food supply right now?
Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Can you imagine having something like that coming towards you where you're expecting upwards of 20 feet or more of storm surge? Imagine a 15 to 20 foot wall of water rushing inland at you.
I can't imagine.
We've got some farmers that are dashing to check what's going on with, you know, how fast can they combine some soybeans. They're trying to get peanuts out of the ground. They're getting cotton taken care of, because cotton, that just looks like a giant swollen marshmallow if you get those bales of cotton covered in water. So there's been a lot of work down there for farmers to get ahead of the storm and get their crop out of there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it'll be something to keep an eye on. I'm just trying to pull up a map here of the elevation of Florida. I'm trying to figure out how far inland 20 feet of water would go for where it's expected to get hit the hardest. But it's not working really well. So while we work on that, why don't we get our guest all squared away? That's Levi Otis. He's going to be joining us here in just a couple moments after the American Ag Network. Again, Levi is with Ellingson Drainage. And if you got any questions, we encourage you to ask them, or any maybe misconceptions. We can get to the bottom of it as well. 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe Shoe line. Or you can reach us via email, weatherorag@flagfamily.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And a welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. So very happy that you're joining us today. We've got Dean Wysocki, Justin Storm, and looking forward to a listener question that we're going to get answered with our guest today. And before we get to that, I feel like our guest today kind of ties in with one of our Here We Grow sponsors, and that would be Red River Retention Authority. They've done a lot of work on dam rehabilitation, particularly on the Elm River this year. More projects to come. Thank you to them for helping us out with our Here We Grow project this year. Custom farming, 20 acres of corn north of Glendon, Minnesota. Tagawa & Company, they have also been a part of that project. They made sure that we had a Fiance fungicide, two modes of action for great disease control in corn, soybeans, and other crops. Thank you to Gowan for being a part of what we do. All right, Levi Otis is joining us with Ellingson Drainage. And Levi, I sent you a listener message that we wanted to answer. So I'm excited to have you in studio for this. The question that came in, and this is coming from the central part of North Dakota in Stetson County. The problem that the listener mentions is with sloughs that are uncontrolled and spreading over roads, cropland, and farmsteads. Is this a management issue with the county water commissioners need to get involved? It is illegal draining caused by farmers. What role could drain tile play in it? This listener believes that excess water is accumulating and there's no place to send it. There's not a river to carry it away. Do canal structures need to be mapped out? Let's just start with, there's a lot going on there. Where would you like to start with that answer, Levi?
Yeah, I should always be careful talking right before a legislative session.
You've got time.
Yeah,
we're not going to session until 26.
Yeah, that's, there you go. There's a lot packed into that question, and the listener is right. It's not only Stutzman County. You look up at Ramsey County, where Devil's Lake is. Cavalier. They're getting tremendous amounts of rain. There's a lot of closed basins in the state. So if you go back historically, we're pretty dry. Even though Devil's Lake over millions of years has come up and down, North Dakota really has been dry. But our soils are so heavy that you do need drainage. You need surface drainage to get the water off the top in the spring because we're such a short growing season that that's where drainage started. Now, in about 1999, tile interest really grew, especially with the advent of a lift station. So in the Red River Valley, we have under 10% of the valley is tiled. Stutsman County, there'd probably be a very low percentage, 1%, 2% of the entire county. So we're not going to – we can't place blame on drain tile. But we do have surface drainage. We have roads. We have culverts. We have ditches that are built. We have sloughing of those ditches where the maintenance dollars haven't kept up with the need. So would I blame it on the Stutsman County Water Board? No, I wouldn't. I think that everybody is culpable in this. I think the State Water Commission needs to dole out money for these ditches so we can move water. And then you do have the point in there that was about I'm a closed basin, right? Water runs in and it doesn't have anywhere to go. We need landowners in the state to partner up and apply for cost share and build more ditches. North Dakota needs ditches, and we have to decide if we are an ag state or a tourism state or what's the balance in between. We produce more food than people can even wrap around their head, right? They just do not know how much food and fuel comes out of this state and our position in the country or globally, to be honest with you. So we need the infrastructure there. We need new roads. We need new bridges. We need to build up that infrastructure, and a lot of that is managing the water along those roads and then giving yourself an outlet to move that water that just continues to drown you out for the last 40 years.
So in this question from our listener wondering, okay, I've got all this water that's coming in. It's more than just drain tile, because if you're talking about sloughs and heavy wet areas, that's more than a drain tile could move. Do you think that's a fair statement, Levi?
Yeah, we're talking serious, biblical heavy amounts of water, right? Like, a tile system removes 3/8 of an inch of water in a 24-hour period. Surface drains move a lot more than that, but the kind of water that we're talking about that is inundating farms like Stutsman County, Ramsey County, those are huge man-made ditches that need to move that water and get it to somewhere to outlet or build big retention ponds and use it to irrigate later. And that's what we have a lot of farmers in South Central North Dakota that are trying to do is how do I retain this water within the regulations, right? Acre feet of water, how much can I retain? And then is there enough to irrigate with it when it's hot in July, August? So it's all about water management. Drain tile is a very, very small part of the whole water management ecosystem. I just believe
you're just one piece of the cog.
Correct. Yep. Part of the solution. Yes.
Absolutely. So, and I appreciate listeners sending these kinds of questions because it's always bigger than just one answer. There's a multitude of things that have to get involved. And especially when it comes to, illegal draining. Look, you and I are not politicians, nor are we government agencies. We do know that folks need to do their homework if they're concerned about who's draining what and where, but that's not up to us to do, would be my answer to that.
Right. I would, how do you say somebody's illegal draining? There are so many laws and restrictions in place. The water boards know who's got equipment out there. They know what's going on. In the tile industry, we're required to report any time that we're going to do a project. So whether it's 5 acres or anything over 80 has to be permitted, but even under 80, we have to notify the water board that we're out there doing work. So I don't know if I'd use the word illegal. I would say inadequate infrastructure for the amount of water that we've had in the last 40 years.
So we need to do some improvements, kind of like what we talk about with Brian Feuder from Red River Retention Authority. We've got to rehabilitate some dams. We have to clean out some areas that have gotten silted in, because that's the only way we're going to get that water to move years where we need it to move.
Yep. We need some dam rehabilitation.
We are good with that.
Our dishes.
We are at the bottom of the hour, but we will come back with Levi Otis. He is with Ellingson. I don't want to call you Levi Ellingson, but I bet somebody does from time to time. So we'll continue our discussion with him about drain tile and other water management things that are going on up and down the area. Be right back.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:34 in the afternoon. One of the thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. Our special guest, Levi Ellingson.
Thanks, Bridget. My phone's blowing up.
Yeah. I know that's not the first time it's happened, has it?
So, Levi, it's been nice. I mean, it's been dry, but how much are you getting extra work done now with tiling, with the nice weather?
Well, you got to remember, it was wet, right? I mean, it was wet until, what, the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, four weeks? I mean, the ground, the water doesn't just disappear when it's dry. People think that it gets as dry as fast as it gets wet, and it takes a year to get dry. It takes one day to get wet,
right?
And so work's been, the amount of work is there, but plowing, and it's tough work when it's wet out, or when the ground is wet.
Right.
Right. Equipment is just not as efficient, let's say, as a dry year. That's why so many farmers like to sign up when it is dry, because the projects go so much smoother. But we are jam packed with work to do.
So does it impede like if this dry weather continues for another couple of weeks, does this make it harder on your equipment?
No, better.
It makes it better?
Yep.
Okay.
The more it dries out, the more efficient we are, the easier it is on our guys, equipment, et cetera. So it's good.
Good.
Levi, does there come a point to where it can become too dry and the ground is too hard?
No.
Is that ever a concern?
Not that I've heard of yet. Nobody's ever complained to us. It's too dry to work today. They might say it's too hot and buggy, but it's too dry is not too bad.
Okay, so for those who don't know, when you are installing tile, you literally have what's called a tile plow. That is opening up a furrow in the ground and putting the tile into that furrow, correct?
Yep. Average depth, 3 to 4 feet. Yep.
After that happens, what are the next steps? Who covers the trench? What does the farmer have to do in that field? Because generally speaking, those fields are all going to be actively farmed the following year. How do you best reclaim that topsoil, et cetera?
Yeah, so each of our salesmen on our company have a trench closer that they loan out to the farmer, and he hooks up and uses the trench closer, loosely puts that furrow, as you call it, or a tile scar, knocks that stuff loose, and over the winter the ground settles. And then the next spring, the farmer works the ground, and then it's planting time. So that's how it gets healed up.
So I think in between those two phases where you're opening the ground up and filling it back in, you said you're putting in tile, but I would imagine most people have no idea what we're talking about when we say tile. So I think we need to define that, if it's a bathroom tile, or maybe it's kitchen tile. What would you say, Levi?
Well, drain tiles, the stuff we use is 95% of it is post-consumer plastic or recycled water bottles, Tide bottles, etc. Most commonly, you might see them for a normal person that's around, like the top of a baseball fence, like Little League baseball fence. You see that plastic that sits on the top of the fence? That's what we have, but it's got small little slits in it where the water can enter it and then be removed.
Right. So it's basically a perforated tube.
4 inches in diameter.
Okay.
What happens if one breaks? Do they break?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have to dig them up. There's been instances where a rock would push against the tile and then typically, I don't know if it breaks, but it kinks it, and then we have to go in and dig it out and then replace that section. And you'll find out that really fast.
I got one for you. This just came to my mind versus the few times that we visited with you, Levi. But when it comes to drain tile and especially the pump stations, how does winter affect that? Is there ever a situation where there's water left in a tube somehow or in a station, and then we either deal with a freezing condition at the pumping station, or I guess I don't know if frost or if the ground freezes that deep, if there's ever a concern for that. What are your thoughts on that when it comes to winter preparation?
Yeah, so
for drain
what we want to see is tile pumps pumping as much as they can in the fall, right before freeze up, so you can get that water to Lake Winnipeg as fast as we can in the winter, in the fall before freeze up. That way, in the spring, we're not contributing to overland flooding. So the ground does freeze. What people have to understand about drain tile is we're lowering the water table. We're not taking the surface water that's coming through and taking that away. What happens is the water that comes from the surface goes all the way down into the ground to the water table, which raises the water table, right? That's when it enters the tile line and goes downstream. So I'm looking at your face and you're like, you're really confusing me. So
that's just normal look. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
So in the fall, again, we want our pumps to be running to remove all the excess moisture that our soil does not want. That way in the spring, as the ground thaws and water starts to soak in, the ground can take that water and maybe less of it will go downstream in a spring flooding event. Right, so you need to open up capacity in your soil to soak in that water.
Okay,
made a little bit more sense that time, didn't it, Justin?
I think I got it.
Okay.
Well, we got a lot of videos on it. If you YouTube Ellingson, there's a lot of videos on how it works. But if you YouTube how does drain tile work, you can see, or you can even type in how does drain tile work, during the winter. I think there's probably videos out there on that. So,
you know, you mentioned you guys have plenty of work to do, but I know you're not going to shut that off. You're always willing to take on projects and get them done in a timely fashion. What are farmers thinking about for next year? When you have a dry fall like this, is drain tile at the forefront of their minds, or that's maybe not a real concern until we get back into a slightly wet cycle?
No, most of the people, I was telling Dean off air, we have a tremendous, like a very large group of book of our business is repeat customers, and they're going to tile no matter what. They're going to tile no matter the price, what the weather situation is. They are writing a check every single year. Some years it might be a section, some years it might be 80 acres, but they are going to put some pipe in the ground. At this time of the year, they're looking at, okay, what's our crop price? How much do I have in the bin? What's going to happen with the election, all those different things. But the guys who tile always are talking about tile.
And one thing to consider when you are talking about tile, you're doing that to increase your yield. It's not because it's fun and sounds like a great idea. You do see a yield increase once you put tile in the ground.
So Levi, Bridget said, if this increases your yield, why aren't more in our ag community using drain tile? Is it a cost thing?
Yeah, I would say the upfront cost. My friends and I just bought a whole cow, like a butchered cow.
Right.
And the upfront cost on it,
it's a lot.
Yeah, it's $3,600 for an entire cow, or $900 a quarter. Well, you can go to the grocery store and you only have to spend $30 this week, but over time, you are going to save a tremendous amount of money buying the entire cow up front. It's just a capital outlay.
Right.
So it's the same thing. If it costs you 150, 160 grand a tile a quarter or more, do you want to bite that off? Or it comes down to cash for the first time. And then after it starts producing, people just take that money and keep churning.
Has there been some help, depending on where we are in a political administration, is there more or less help for conservation practices that would involve drain tile at this point? And do you think that might change depending on how the election turns out in November?
Well,
loaded question. I know. I apologize, Levi.
Well, we are in the Prairie Pothole region. So the Prairie Pothole region has a different set of rules than everywhere else in the country. So you can go on NRCS, USDA, and you can look at cost share or different conservation practices where they try to promote drain tile or lift stations or cost share those things. And if you go to like North Dakota, Iowa, Western Iowa, South Dakota, Minnesota, those things don't show up like they might in Maryland, right? So it's the same people with the same rule book. They just don't allow you to see some of the pages of the rule book. And so out here, that's what we battle, right? And we got to determine, are we an ag state? Is it a conservation? Is the state a national park? Is that what they want? And when we talk about crop insurance and then we talk about prevent plant and we talk about $34 trillion in debt, how can you continue to pump money to pay people not to farm rather than working with them and saying, all right, this is really good farm ground. We do need it. We will need it someday to feed, right? Mm-hmm. Or do we try to regulate them and stop them from doing and hoping it just keeps raining and we become, you know, the Buffalo Commons and prairie grasses and we don't have production agriculture? Sounds dramatic, but that's kind of how it is.
Yeah. Well, Levi, thanks for joining us this afternoon. If anybody is interested in Ellington, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
701-893-9030, 9030, 893-9030 is our phone number. We'll put you in touch with, if you got pump issues, we'll put you in touch with our guy. If you've got, you know, a salesman, we'll put you in touch with the right guy. Government questions or permitting or you want to yell at somebody, that's usually the same number that gets to me. So. Otherwise, ellingsoncompanies.com.
Okay. Excellent.
What was that website again, Levi?
Ellingsoncompanies.com. Company is plural.
And thank you so much to Ellingson for being a part of our Here We Grow project. Again, we're custom farming our 20 acres of corn north of Glinda, Minnesota, just straight east of Harwood, not far from your site, actually, Levi. And just thank you for being a part of that. It's been a great learning experience. And you have a new video that we just put up about 10 days ago, so people get a chance to see your product in action by our fields.
Awesome. Well, appreciate it. Education is important, and that's where most of the drama comes from is lack of education. So thank you guys for doing it.
Thanks, Levi. I appreciate it.
That's right.
Yep, thank you.
All right. So when we come back here, we're going to do a recap of the weather. We've got a recap on Hurricane Helene. It has strengthened even further. We'll recap that and our weather and more coming up right after the break.
And welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us. 1:49 on this afternoon. We'll run down your forecast coming here in just a moment, but an update on the hurricane. Dean, what's going on down there?
Well, it's
as this big spinny boy heads towards the big bendy area of Florida.
Yeah, Helene has now been upgraded to a Cat 3, 120 mile an hour sustained. That's sustained winds, and only 11 miles mile an hour from a Cat 4. So could this strengthen into a Cat 4? It's a possibility. This is not supposed to make landfall till this evening. So it's got plenty of warm Gulf water to go over and continue to strengthen. If you're looking at our live stream, there's a live satellite shot of it. Now a well-defined eye and, again, continuing to move generally in a north, slight northeast trajectory. That would bring it inland, pretty close to Tallahassee area. Boy, it's a that whole Big Bend area is going to get just hit extremely hard. Flooding rains, and again, this is not going to move out to sea. This is moving inland, so this is going to affect areas of Georgia, South Carolina, all the way up into Tennessee, southern parts of Indiana. I mean, this thing is going to affect a lot of territory with flooding rainfall, and like Bridget said, they're kind of speeding things up for some of the peanuts and cotton and everything in the southeast, trying to get those under wrap before this thing really starts to intensify. And boy, I just heart goes out to these people because I'll tell you what, they just got hit. They got hit twice already this year, Hurricane Beryl, and then there was another one after that, and now Helene. So it hasn't been a very active hurricane season as a whole, but boy, the target area has definitely been that part of northwestern Florida for sure.
How long have you guys had this on the radar with the LRC? And I mean, I say radar, which is not actually the right term to use, but how long have you been thinking about that?
Well, I mean, Gary had this pegged in March. So once the cycle was set and this was put out on his website that in March, this was pegged for the Big Bend area, and I believe he had it somewhere between the 25th and the 28th. Justin, does that sound right? where this was supposed to
something
come on shore?
Like that. I'd have to go back to see the exact numbers, but it was somewhere around this date.
So yeah, it was we don't have to deal with that, and we've had a few people ask, you know, how does this affect our weather? Well, when it goes out to sea, it typically doesn't, but when it comes inland like that, it kind of slows down the progression of any weather systems across the U.S. moving from west to east. So you're kind of stuck in a pattern. What you see is what you get. And sure enough, that's we've got some mild weather all the way through the weekend before that system finally weakens by Sunday and allows a couple of fronts to come through here as we head into next week. So we'll notice a big change in our weather out of the unseasonably warm weather back into kind of a more seasonal weather as we head into the end of the month and then starting off the month of October. I'm ready for fall.
Yeah.
This is a little too...
Let's go fall!
What's the furthest north a hurricane has ever made landfall as you look up and down the East Coast?
New York?
I wondered if that was the case.
It has hit... Yeah.
I don't think there's been anything further north than New York.
No, it's and the
great
reason
question.
Yeah, that is a great question, Bridget. Every once in a while, she comes up with a few, doesn't she? I like it.
I wish I could come up with good questions, man.
But and one of the reasons is the ocean temperatures are just too cool to sustain a hurricane strength that far north. So that's why it's kind of rare when they do get that far north, but it has happened. She gets a star for the day, Justin.
I'm trying to search this up really quick.
Using the old Google machine?
Well, I'm trying to.
While you're searching, keep in mind that there are some horses that can actually be at a higher risk of cancer, namely around their eyes. When you think about a paint and what its color pattern is, they generally have a white face and pink around their eyes, so they're a much lighter skinned. Because of that, what it's called a bald face, and you can see a bald face on beef animal breeds as well, or even dairy, that actually lends itself to skin cancer in that region. You can prevent that on a paint horse who's going to be exposed to a lot of sunshine, whether it's in the summer or even in the winter, reflecting off the snow, by putting a UV protectant fly mask over their faces, and that will cover things. But if you have a horse and you start to notice that maybe there are some raised pink masses on the eyelid or the cornea, or if you start to see a substantial yellow ocular discharge, and of course, if there are small red burns that have scabs on them, that could be ocular squamous cell carcinoma. So you can see a skin cancer in your horses, especially because they have that lighter skin when it gets heavy exposure to UV rays. Who knew? Horses and cancer can happen.
I wouldn't have thought at all.
Did you find anything, Justin?
Well, I am, but I haven't gotten an exact answer yet.
Okay. I've gotten a couple. Okay. I've seen a Hurricane Noel struck as far north as Greenland in 2007. So we're getting up there. That's much further north than New York, but
Greenland?
Yes. Hurricane Noel.
Wow, that is way up
there. Yeah.
Are we sure it was a hurricane at that point? Right. Or was it the remnants of hurricane?
It does not say.
Because I know that there's been a few hurricanes that have undergo extratropical transition and struck right there before.
Yeah. But let's see. And then extratropical from Hurricane Faith hit Norway back in...
Okay, so yeah, these are hurricane remnants that turn into mid-latitude cyclones we get across the United States. Those are all mid-lat cyclones. Hurricanes can turn into those.
And it's not just the crop that can be damaged by the hurricane. You know, I mentioned that our guest from yesterday was concerned about having enough generator power for their meat locker because they already had processed pork products. But if you have confinement operation like hogs and chickens, you have got to be able to moderate the temperatures in those as well. So if they lose power, you could see death loss in those livestock operations. And if you have beef cattle and they've been standing in an area that can get very muddy, you could see foot rot following these types of storms because those animals didn't have a place to go and they were in muddy, wet conditions for an extended period of time. So you may have to be looking at a course of antibiotics. Maybe they got to get the hoof guy out there, just like Justin mentioned earlier. But, you know, hurricanes bring on a lot of damage in urban and in rural areas.
What do they do? What do they do with their... Sorry, Justin. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dean.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, if memory serves me right, I believe that they actually have a fairly decent amount of animals in Florida, especially the northern third, and when it comes to
beef,
especially cattle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's some big beef herds in Florida, to be honest. And they would be in an area. Hopefully, there's enough sand that that water would drain away. But if you have an extended period of time and that animal, let's say, gets clipped by a fence post and gets a nick, or a cut, and then they're standing in the water or the mud, you can easily see an infection begin, and you can lead to hoof rot.
And there's no way to to get them kind of huddled in one area or get them in into shelter, is there?
Not a lot. You don't have enough barns, and you certainly want them on concrete, not mud or dirt.
Right. Right. Well, that'll do it for us for Weather and Ag and Focus on this Thursday. Enjoy the rest of your day today. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.